Our next two speakers are linked, so I will introduce them separately. They are linked by the fact that they are both visiting professors here at the School of Politics, International Studies and Philosophy at Queen's. This school is a world leader in the study of ethnicity, nationalism and in particular Irish politics. So it's a great honour to have one of Ireland's most distinguished political scientists here to speak to us today. John Coakley's publications are so broad in range and so many, and unfortunately that's true of our next speaker as well, that I will be forgiven for perhaps only mentioning one of them on this occasion. His recent book, Nationalism, Ethnicity and the State, Making and Breaking Nations. John Coakley combines broad international comparative interests with an extraordinary depth of knowledge on Irish politics. He's a member of the Royal Irish Academy, the highest distinction of the Irish academic world. He's a former head of the School of Politics at University College Dublin. He has just had a celebration, I think, this week on his retirement as founding director of the Institute of British Irish Studies at University College Dublin, that's played a very important political role over the past decade. It's my great honour to introduce John Coakley.
Thanks very much, Margaret, for the kind introduction. I'm afraid I can't compete on the ancestry stakes with either of the two previous speakers. All known ancestors of mine going back five generations come from the North Galway or South Mayo border area. So apologies for that lack of diversity. In looking for an introduction to the question of Scottish independence and its similarity to the Irish case, I look back exactly 100 years to the Irish Times of the 25th of June 1914. At the time, of course, the Irish Times was very much the voice of unionism, the voice of Irish unionism. Not surprisingly, it focused on the evils of the Home Rule Bill and of the Home Rule Act, whose implementation was at that stage being planned. So it focused on the financial cost to Ireland of Home Rule. Would Ireland be able to afford its educational system? No, said the Commissioner of National Education. The damage to Ulster, mechanisms for excluding Ulster from the writ of Home Rule, or for devising imaginative schemes such as Home Rule for Ulster within Home Rule. But if we look at the debate of the period, there are two major features that differentiate the Ireland of 1914 from the Scotland of today. The first of them has to do with the perceived threat to British identity, to the integrity of the kingdom, of the United Kingdom, to the integrity of the empire itself, and to the unity of the empire itself, that was posed, or seen as being posed, by Irish Home Rule. So this value is profoundly held in London, by the English in particular. And second, the second feature distinctive to the Irish case, lacking in Scotland, was the perceived threat to the minority, to the Protestant minority on the island of Ireland, but in particular to Ulster Protestantism. The fear that home rule, would home rule, not necessarily an accurate one, home rule would be Rome rule. Now, these features are clearly absent in the Scottish case. The perspective of the United Kingdom, and of the United Kingdom leadership, of the political establishment in the United Kingdom, in 2014 is utterly different from that of 1914. The UK has formally told Northern Ireland, to start with, has formally told Northern Ireland that it may leave, you may leave. If you want to leave the United Kingdom, we will facilitate this. That's very unusual for the government of a contemporary state to accept this position or to endorse this position. It is agreed to a referendum in the case of Scotland, to agree, by implication, even to abide by the results of the referendum in the case of Scotland. So the kind of ruthlessness of the Tory leadership of the early 20th century seems to be gone. The cynicism of the Tories in playing the orange card has also gone. That's the first major change. Second, it is, of course, possible to play the orange card precisely because this card existed. There was powerful opposition in Ulster to Home Rule, as we know so well. But such opposition, the opposition in Scotland to the notion of independence, lacks the kind of ideological intensity of Irish unionism of the early 20th century, and in particular it lacks its geographical concentration. So if we're to try to adopt a slogan such as Dumfries and Galloway and the borders will fight, and Dumfries and Galloway and the borders will be right, to paraphrase Randolph Churchill. This does not have a ring to it. This slogan is never going to gain traction because of particular social realities. It may well be the case that those districts of Scotland, that region of Scotland, is more hostile to independence than the rest of Scotland, but this is not embedded in profound sociocultural differences. So, given these kind of changes, what are the implications of Scottish independence for Northern Ireland? So, if we can imagine a pro-independence vote, the yes vote winning, and something that we shouldn't take for granted, the outcome of this being implemented, then the first reality is that the Union has been dissolved. The Union that created the United Kingdom has been dissolved. The Union was between Ireland and Great Britain, not between Ireland and England, or later between Northern Ireland and England. It was between Northern Ireland and Great Britain. So the Union will have been dissolved. And in addition to this formal reality, there's a social psychological one that has been referred to earlier today. For many Northern Ireland Protestants, in fact, perhaps for most Northern Ireland Protestants, the close emotional links are with Scotland, not England. So there's reference today to the notion of Scottish Ulster culture, embedded actually in the Good Friday Agreement, formally recognised in the Good Friday Agreement. And I'm all struck by looking at flags here and the display of flags here. We'll of course find the Union flag, we find the Ulster flag and a range of other flags. But I haven't tried to count this, but the number of Scottish flags is extraordinarily impressive, again pointing to this close relationship between Scotland and Northern Ireland Protestants. So it seems to me that certain emotional links will continue, certain emotional bonds will continue. The loyalty of many people in Northern Ireland to the monarchy, for example, but this crucial link with Scotland will have ended. So if we look at the options for Northern Ireland then, and simply speculating on some of these, first, its relationship with Scotland is gone and virtually irreparable. How can Northern Ireland re-establish a relationship with Scotland? Well, through diplomatic means, by going through the UK government and trying to establish new formal relations with Scotland by that means. What will the UK government look like? There'll be a new map of this state. So if we look at envisage a map of these two islands, on the western island, the southern part, the great bulk of the island, has already disappeared. It disappeared in 1922. Now we look at the other island, the eastern island, its northern part is now gone. So we have a map of the state that consists of Northern Ireland up here, out in the middle of the sea, and England and Wales down here. And this will highlight the new bilateral relationship between Belfast and London. And this relationship will not just be bilateral, there will be a reciprocal component to it, to which attention will be drawn in these new circumstances. So the people of Northern Ireland will have to tell the English, not the British or the Scottish, they'll have to tell the English, we love you. The people of England will respond, in all probability, saying, well, we don't really love you, but we have a sense of obligation towards you, and for this reason, we're prepared to tolerate continued links with you, or maybe not tolerate them. In these circumstances, what other options lie open to Northern Ireland? I would predict that one is they will look south. People of Northern Ireland will look south. However, in looking south, they should not be too sanguine about the kind of welcome that they would get in Dublin in these circumstances. They might find in Dublin a not very eager suitor. There was reference earlier, somebody made reference to the territorial claim of Dublin to Northern Ireland. This claim, of course, disappeared. I'm not sure whether it ever meant much. Possibly it did. This claim disappeared in December 1999 and was replaced by something quite different. It wasn't simply dropped from the Irish Constitution. It was replaced by two articles which, between them, guarantee the future status of Northern Ireland as part of the United Kingdom. These two articles now guarantee the permanence of the border unless certain very demanding conditions, including a referendum on each side of the border, unless certain very demanding conditions are satisfied. So it seems to me that Northern Ireland, like the Republic of Ireland, Northern Ireland's leadership, need to consider these options and these probable outcomes. So, thank you.